Brit. In life, I was your partner, Jacob Marley. Can you sit down? Asked Scrooge, looking doubtfully at him. I can. Do it, then! Scrooge asked the question because he didn't know whether a ghost so transparent might find himself in a condition to take a chair, and felt that in the event of its being impossible, it might involve the necessity of an embarrassing explanation. But the ghost sat down on the opposite side of the fireplace, as if he were quite used to it. You don't believe in me, observed the ghost. I don't, said Scrooge. What evidence would you have of my reality beyond that of your senses? I don't know, said Scrooge. Why doubt your senses? Because, said Scrooge, a little thing affects them. A slight disorder of the stomach makes them cheats. You may be an undigested bit of beef, a blot of mustard, a crumb of cheese, a fragment of an undone potato. There's more of gravy than of grave about you. Whatever you are. Scrooge was not much in the habit of cracking jokes, nor did he feel in his heart by any means waggish then. The truth is that he tried to be smart, as a means of distracting his own attention, and keeping down his terror, for the spectre's voice disturbed the very marrow in his bones. To sit, staring at those fixed, glazed eyes in silence for a moment would play, Scrooge felt, the very deuce with him. There was something very awful, too, in the spectre's being, provided with an infernal atmosphere of its own. Scrooge could not feel it in himself. But this was clearly the case, for though the ghost sat perfectly motionless, its hair and skirts and tassels were still agitated as by the hot vapor from an oven. "You see this toothpick?" said Scrooge, returning quickly to the charge, for the reason just assigned, and wishing, though it were only for a second, to divert the vision's stony gaze from himself.
"I do," replied the ghost.
"You are looking at it," said Scrooge.
"But I see it," said the ghost. Notwithstanding.
Well, returned Scrooge, I have but to swallow this, and be for the rest of my days persecuted by a legion of goblins, all of my own creation. Humbug, I tell you, humbug! At this the spirit raised a frightful cry, and shook its chains with such a dismal and appalling noise, that Scrooge held on tight to his chair, to save himself from falling in a swoon. But how much greater was his horror when the phantom, taking off his bandage round his head as if it were too warm to wear indoors, its lower jaw dropped down upon its breast. Scrooge fell upon his knees and clasped his hands before his face. "Mercy!" he said. "Dreadful apparition! Why do you trouble me?"
"Man of the worldly mind," replied the ghost, "do you believe in me or not?"
"I do," said Scrooge. "I must. But why do spirits walk on the earth, and why do they come to me?"
"It is required of every man," the ghost returned, "that the spirit within him should walk abroad among his fellow men, and travel far and wide. And if that spirit goes not forth in life, it is condemned to do so after death. It is doomed to wander through the world. Oh, woe is me! And witness what it cannot share but might have shared on earth, and turn to happiness."
Again the spectre raised a cry, and shook its chains, and wrung its shadowy hands.
"You are fettered," said Scrooge, trembling.
"Tell me why."
"I wear these chains I forged in life," replied the ghost. "I made it link by link, and yard by yard. I girded it on my own free will, and of my own free will I wore it. Is its pattern strange to you?"
Scrooge trembled more and more.
"Or would you know," persuaded the ghost, "the weight and length of the strong coil you bear yourself? It was fully as heavy as long as this, 7 Christmas Eves ago. You have labored on it since. It is a ponderous chain."
Scrooge glanced about him on the floor, in the expectation to find himself surrounded by some 50 or 60 fathoms of iron cable. But he could see nothing.
"Jacob," he said imploringly, "old Jacob Marley, tell me more. Speak comfort to me, Jacob." "I have none to give," the ghost replied. "It comes from other regions, Ebenezer Scrooge, and is conveyed by other ministers to other kinds of men. Nor can I tell you what I would. A very little more is all permitted to me. I cannot rest, I cannot stay, I cannot linger anywhere. My spirit never walked beyond our counting house. Mark me, in life my spirit never rode beyond the inner limits of our money-changing holes, and weary journeys lie before me.
It was a habit with Scrooge, whenever he became thoughtful, to put his hands in his breeches pockets, pondering on what the ghost had said. He did so now, but without lifting up his eyes or getting off his knees.
"You must have been very slow about it, Jacob," Scrooge observed in a business-like manner, though with humility and deference.
"Slow,"
the ghost repeated.
7 years dead," mused Scrooge.
"And travelling all that time?"
"The whole time," said the ghost.
"No peace, no rest, incessant torture of remorse?"
"You travel fast," said Scrooge.
"On the wings of the wind," replied the ghost.
"You might have got over a great quantity of ground in 7 years," said Scrooge.
The ghost, on hearing this, set up another cry, and clanked its chain so hideously in the dead silence of the night that the ward would have been justified in indicting it for a nuance.
"No, captive, bound, and double-ironed!" cried the phantom. "Not to know that ages of incessant labor by immortal creatures, for this earth must pass into eternity before the good of which it is susceptible is all developed. Not to know that any Christian spirit, working kindly in its little sphere, whatever it may be, will find its mortal life too short for its vast means of usefulness. Not to know that no space of regret can make amends for one life's opportunities misused. Yet such was I. Oh, such was I."
"But you were always a good man of business, Jacob," faltered Scrooge, who now began to apply this to himself.
"Business!" cried the ghost, wringing its hands again. "Mankind was my business. The common welfare was my business. Charity, mercy, forbearance, and benevolence were all my business. The dealings of my trade were but a drop of water in the comprehensive ocean of my business."
It held up its chains at arm's length, as if that were the cause of all its unavailing grief, and flung it heavily upon the ground again.
"At this time of the rolling year," the specter said, "I suffer most. Why did I walk through crowds of fellow beings with my eyes turned down, and never raise them to that blessed star which led the wise men to a poor abode? Were there no poor homes to which its light would have conducted me?"
Scrooge was very much dismayed to hear the spectre going on at this rate, and began to quake exceedingly.
"Hear me," cried the ghost. "My time is nearly gone."
"I will,"
said Scrooge. "But don't be hard upon me. Don't be flowery, Jacob, pray. How it is that I appear before you in a shape that you can see, I may not tell. I have sat invisible beside you many and many a day."
It was not an agreeable idea. Scrooge shivered, and wiped the perspiration from his brow.
"That is no light part of my penance," pursued the ghost. "I am here tonight to warn you that you have yet a chance and hope of escaping my fate, a chance and hope of my procuring Ebenezer."
"You were always a good friend to me," said Scrooge. "Thank ye."
"You will be haunted," resumed the ghost, "by 3 spirits.
Scrooge's countenance fell almost as low as the ghost's had done.
"Is that the chance and hope you mentioned, Jacob?"
he demanded in a faltering voice.
"It is."
I think I'd rather not," said Scrooge.
"Without their visits," said the ghost, "you cannot hope to shun the path I tread. Expect the first ghost tomorrow when the bell tolls 1.
"Couldn't I take him all at once and have it over, Jacob?" hinted Scrooge.
"Expect the second on the next night at the same hour, the third upon the next night when the last stroke of 12 has ceased to vibrate. Look to see me no more, and look that, for your own sake, you remember what has passed between us."
When it had said these words, the spectre took its wrapper from the table and bound it round its head, as before. Scrooge knew this by the smart sound its teeth made, when the jaws were brought together by the bandage. He ventured to raise his eyes again, and found his supernatural visitor confronting him in an erect